Hello, everybody, and welcome back into another edition of the Hockey Writers Podcast season preview shows here on the YouTube channel. And of course, on anywhere you're getting your podcast, if you're listening. We're really about halfway through these previews now, and we've got another one coming at you. Edmonton Oilers, as you can see, Jim Parsons here is here with us. He covers NHL rumors, a whole bunch of stuff on the Hockey Writers website. He's got Edmonton Oilers. He covers a bunch of other stuff, and you've seen him on the YouTube channel before. Thanks, Jim, for coming on the show.
Sure, absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right. Well, I also joined in by my co-host Kyle Knopp as well. If you've watched these, you've seen our faces a lot in the last couple of weeks. So let's get started, Jim, on the Edmonton Oilers. Very exciting team coming into this season, coming off Stanley Cup, or almost a Stanley Cup final. Really close to it, Western Conference final appearance, and really a lot of excitement coming into this season with some great new additions, just guys coming back that was really exciting to come back. So let's start with one of the only new addition, or two of the only new additions, one that's probably one's going to make the roster, Matthias Janmark and Greg McKay. What are your expectations of these two guys coming into this season?
Well, Matthias Janmark is the more likely of the two to play some games with the Oilers this season. I think they signed him as just sort of a depth piece that could play different kinds of roles on the team. And I don't even believe he'll be a regular. I think this is probably a guy who will shuffle in and out of the lineup. I would imagine he'll stay probably with the roster most of the season, but like a Devin Shore or like a Kyle Turris or things like that from previous years, he's probably not going to see the ice every night. But he does have some pieces. He is a depth guy. He's got some experience. So I expect that he'll probably get slot rolled into certain places. If there's an injury or something like that, I would assume that he'll probably fill in. As far as Greg McKay goes, I don't anticipate we'll see him very much this season. He's a guy that, unfortunately, there's a slight risk involved. If you send him down, he's got to clear waivers. But I don't assume that anybody's going to probably pick him up. So he's probably a safe waiver wire claim if you can put him down there, and he'll spend some time in Bakersfield. Something would probably have to happen. I think there's a future for him, but I just think this is the season where the Oilers are very deep.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of guys coming in on PTOs. Their top nine is pretty solid. It's just a matter of shuffling around their right wing. So I don't see a real slot for him. Something would have to really go sideways for him to get a really solid look, but I do believe there's potential for him down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love the Devin Shore call out for you, Matthias Janmark. I think that's going to be a very similar role to what he ends up playing this year. And, good veteran piece, but a really more of a filler this season.
Yeah. And I think he knows that too, right? He's coming in on a team where he understands what his job is going to be. And it's probably not an NHL regular every night. So yeah. I think he gets it. And I think he understands that, and he's probably cool with it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm sure he would be playing with that lineup over there. Absolutely. Well, let's talk about a guy who found out he was cool with it playing with McDavid last year. And that's Evander Kane, who in 43 games had 22 goals and then lit up the playoffs with 13 more. So what do you expect in a first full season with McDavid from Evander Kane?
How out on a limb should I go here?
I would love to hear it.
45. I think 45 goals this season. And I think he could do more than that if he stays healthy. The key being also that McDavid stays healthy, right? I think these two, if working together, because that's a tandem that you're probably going to see most nights. Another comment I made earlier where something would have to go sideways. Something would have to go sideways for these two not to be played together. No matter what combination you slot in here, whether you have a trio on your top line that you really like or you just go pairs, I think McDavid and Kane are the pair that you have on that top line. And then you figure out who else goes with them. So that's a duo that we're going to see some major chemistry with. They've already proven that they have it. If both stay healthy and he plays a full season, 45 is not out of the realm of possibility. Yeah. He could even creep close to 50. It's hard to get 50, but so I won't go that far and say that he's going to get 50, but I wouldn't be shocked if he gets 45. And I think my hope here off-ice related is that this is a year where he really kind of settles in and people look at this and go, we were worried for nothing. Like, here's a guy that signed a 4-year deal. Now he's comfortable. Now he's got all this money. His grievance case with San Jose is figured out. He has every right now to get lazy and do what Evander Kane does. I think that if he figures it out and he's just happy being here, that's not going to be an issue. And that will settle everybody down. That'll just bring everybody kind of like, okay, this was a good idea. he fits. It's not just a half a season thing where he's on his best behavior. So that I'm more looking forward to, because I think that he's going to figure that out and be a really, really positive addition for the Oilers.
Oh, absolutely. If he can find a way to settle down and allow himself to be himself and still put up that same amount of points, playing with one of the best players in the world, absolutely. I think he'll find that he really does love hockey again, and that could go a long way with this team.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah, and there's never been a question about his skill on the ice. It's always been there, and it's just that other stuff that creeps in.
Yeah, I mean, look what he did in San Jose when he wasn't even happy.
That's a
team that didn't want him at all. He didn't necessarily want to be there. He still was their highest scorer. So when he's not playing at his top level, he's still pretty good. So you put him with McDavid or Draisaitl and you keep him in your top six for an entire season, it's going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's talk about a guy that also came in last season as a big free agent, Zach Hyman. Had a career year, 27 goals. Do you see him hitting that again, or is he going to regress in his second season?
I don't know that he'll regress, but what I am going to watch is what position he plays. I think there might be some shuffling around from left to right wing and right to left wing and who he slots in with. The question about who he, like if we were talking about duos with someone like McDavid and Kane, you need to find a partner for Draisaitl, whether that's Yamamoto or even Dylan Holloway or something like that. But I don't know if Hyman and Nugent Hopkins is going to be that duo that you stick together and they stay together. That's a pretty good duo. I think they'll be pretty good because they're really two very solid two-way players who, if they're on the third line, are going to get some really sweet minutes against some less stellar competition. But I also think Hyman is a top six guy. So I believe he's going to shift in and out of there. I think he's probably going to move around the lineup a lot. And if that happens, there is the potential that it's going to take him some time to just sort of figure out a new line mate, or maybe he's hot and cold and things like that. But he's solid. He's absolutely going to be a reliable guy no matter where you put him. And he's going to give you a ton of solid minutes, even if he's not necessarily scoring. So I don't know that he's going to get more than 27. He certainly could get 30, but he could also get 23. So I'll say it's probably pretty close to what he did last season. Is he probably going to do that again?
Yeah, I see him landing somewhere in that mid 20 range. But like you said, if he does end up on solidified in that third line role, I mean, that could lead to more offensive opportunities just based on not facing that top six competition night in and night out.
Well, and you got to think he's going to play power play minutes too, right? Like also he's one of those guys that's going to get in front of the net. He's going to be a regular on the first unit power play. So even if he's on the third line, 5-on-5, he's going to be on the first unit power play. So he's going to get a lot of gravy points for that too.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to another polarizing figure, someone that, as you mentioned, being hot and cold has been, but a little more on the inconsistent side than Hyman, and that's Jesse Pulivaari. And I want to get your thoughts on where he fits in this lineup. Is there a future for him in Edmonton, or do you see him getting traded at some point this season?
Well, the talk is that if there's a trade, he's the likely trade candidate. But Ken Holland did a press conference today for the Oilers, and he made it sound like there's no trade coming. I think that they're going to play with a short roster. I think there might have to be a deal if he can't get it figured out and can't get Ryan McLeod signed. They're going to have to make some kind of a move. But if he's going with a 21-man roster, then I don't believe he's trying to trade Puljujärvi. And I don't think he's going to dump Puljujärvi. I think you've got a solid player that you believe in, and he just needs to have a consistent season. The question for me, if he sticks around, is where he plays, because there's going to be that debate about putting him on the top line and having him be the third on the Kane and McDavid trio, or sticking him on the third line and making him work his way up. Because the debate at the end of the last season was that he felt, I don't know if these were out of his mouth or somebody else or his agent or whatever, that he sort of felt entitled to the idea that he was a top six guy, even though he hadn't consistently proved it.
Yeah.
The analytic numbers support that he's a pretty good hockey player, but he was inconsistent. So if I'm Jay Woodcroft, I'm getting Puljujärvi to earn his spot. Come in here, get really good on the third line, show that you're going to, and then move you up, because there's an opening on that first line. And if you go first line and you don't light it up at the beginning of the season, you're demoting him and probably crushing his confidence. So I would be concerned about that if he's playing for you at the start of the season. So I think he's going to have a decent year if he stays. And I think he's going to be in a good space mentally. I believe that he's going to have a bounce back season. Didn't have a bad season, just was up and down, right? A really hot start. Then he got injured, had COVID, didn't go well for him at the end of the year, and Kyler Yamamoto sort of supplanted him there. So I think he'll have a solid year. I don't know if he's staying. I mean, the money has to work out somehow, and he's making some of it, and maybe a team will take him for nothing, but I just don't see Holland dumping him for nothing. It'll be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, that's going to be a story. It's going to be
absolutely
until something happens, right? So
yeah, something's got to give. It's just a matter of whether or not it's him.
Yeah,
it'll be like the next JT Miller saga, right? Is he? Won't they?
Yeah, well, we've been watching it all summer, but it's just a matter of what else can you do if you're Ken Holland, right? Because you don't want to dump him.
Right. But
you might not have a choice as you get closer to camp here and the season. You got to move money. Like, you just have to. So
yeah.
Yeah,
McLeod's going to be a big piece of that future too.
Yeah, I believe so. I think he's going to really be a really solid player. And I think if he ends up signing a one-year deal at around $900,000, that may be one of the better value deals in the NHL this season.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
for sure. Well, let's move to a guy you kind of mentioned briefly, and Dylan Holloway. He played, 5 minutes in the playoffs?
There. Like two shifts or something, yeah.
Not really much. But he has a chance of making this roster. Do you see him as a full-time NHLer this season, or does he play a lot in Bakersfield?
Here's the deal. He has to start at Edmonton. He's going to be on the opening night roster, because if you don't do that, the salary cap bonus on his contract, if you call him up from Bakersfield, is massive. It's like twice what he gets on his entry-level deal. So it's a major cap concern for the Oilers if they don't have him on the roster to start the season. That said, he might play one game and go down. You know, that could be the situation for him. But I believe they're going to try to put him on this team. He's played really well in Penticton in the Oilers camp here. He's a guy that looks to be healthy. He feels good. His wrist is good. He says he's ready to go. And he was the best player in that entire camp between like the Jets, Canucks, Flames, and Oilers. So, it's just one of those camps. You never really know what that's going to mean. But there's an opportunity here for him to play in the top six. But Ken Holland did say that if he's not in the top nine, he's not playing in the NHL. They're not going to put him on the fourth line and give him 7 minutes. They're just they'll put him back in Bakersfield. They'll let him get a bunch of shifts, a ton of minutes. And then when something's needed, they'll call him back up. So I don't think he plays here all season, but if he wows, he's going to get his 9 games or whatever the case may be. And we'll see, but there's an opening here and he could get it if he continues to play well, but all season, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I can agree with that. That's going to be, I mean, like you said, he's going to really have to prove himself to be there. But there is that chance. There's the opportunity, and you never know what these kids can do when they're presented with that.
Yeah, with the depth the Oilers have on forward, he's in a different situation than a guy we'll probably talk about, like Philip Roberg. Dylan Holloway has to make this team. Like, he has got to be good enough to make the team and be chosen. Whereas Broberg necessarily doesn't. He has to work his way off the team. So Holloway really has to impress. And I think he's done so far, but we'll see if he can keep it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned some guys coming over on PTOs, and this one guy is coming over to not only make a case for himself for the Oilers, but just back in the NHL in general. And that's Jake Virtanen. And so I want to get your thoughts on, does Virtanen have a legitimate shot at making this Oilers team, or what is this PTO going to do for him moving forward?
Short answer, I think no. I don't think Virtanen makes his team for a number of reasons. One, I think the Oilers have brought in a few guys on PTOs simply to get through preseason. They have five games in 8 days, right?
Yeah.
And there are rules about how many veterans you have to play in a preseason game. Virtanen qualifies. Jason Demers qualifies, right? So you can put these guys in and rest your heavy star veterans without overplaying them. The other reason is, I think Jake Virtanen didn't really wow anybody. There's some talent there. And when he played in Vancouver, what was it, 2018, 19 or 19, 20, he had a decent season, but he hasn't done anything in the KHL. He doesn't really offer you penalty killing, which is kind of where the Oilers would need him to play if he's going to play in the bottom depth forward position, because they got some depth. So I don't see that he's got much of a shot here. I mean, he's got a long shot. Anything is possible. If he comes in and he plays really well in preseason, he certainly could. I don't believe you bring him in for absolutely no reason whatsoever. But I also don't know if he's going to play well enough that any other team's going to be like, yeah, let's just go grab that guy. So I think he's got a long shot of even playing in the NHL this season, to be honest with you. But as far as what he's coming in from, it's hard to judge a guy when you know for sure that he's been found innocent by a jury. whether or not the public opinion, you know, court of public opinion is going to affect him and how he plays and how people look at this. I don't think the Oilers have an issue with it. The fans certainly do in some cases, but I don't know if it'll matter. I don't think he's going to make this roster.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's more just for keeping the team as healthy as possible coming out of training camp, you know, and like you said, five games in 8 days is a lot of hockey when you're just getting back into the swing of things.
Yeah. Yeah. The last thing you want to have is this lineup or anybody major star get hurt.
Yeah.
In the first like five games before the season even starts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think Fertan would have got as much press if his off ice stuff. I think it would just kind of flew under the radar if that other stuff wasn't happening. But
well, there were a number of teams interested. You know, we heard at least two, Calgary and Washington, were talking to him. I think there were probably more. So there were interested teams, but there was also talk that he wasn't going to come to Edmonton, and then he did come to Edmonton. So maybe everything else fell through.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know really how much legitimate interest there was in him.
Yeah, true. We'll see what happens there. All right. Well, let's talk about this forward group as a whole. They're pretty strong, obviously having two of the best players in the world on the team. Where do you see them kind of matching up in the specific division this year?
In the Pacific division, they might be the best in terms of just, I don't know, that's going to sound biased because I'm an Oilers guy, but if you look at their top six, really it's a top five. It's Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Zach Hyman, and Evander Kane. There may not be a better top five than that in the Pacific division. It might be top three in the NHL. It's just a matter of who the sixth person is that you're going to put in there. So, but there are some teams. I still think Calgary's got a really solid roster at forward. There's a lot of teams with some really solid players, but when you're talking about like 90% or 85%, whatever that number is, five out of six, that's a solid top six. So I think that you're going to be in good shape if you're having those guys on the ice most of the time. I think their top nine is pretty decent. There's going to be a little, you know, let back when it comes to the fourth line and the depth there. So I think you might have to be concerned with that. But if we're still talking about a guy like Ryan McLeod, and Kyle, you mentioned that he is going to be a player. He might be on the fourth line at some times this season. If that's where you have him and that's the only place you can fit him, that's pretty good. Like that's a good problem to have if you're the Edmonton Oilers. It's not where he should be playing and it's not where you want him playing. But if that's the only place to put him because your depth is so strong, that's a good problem to have. So I do like the way their forward group stacks up.
I agree. I mean, that's like you said, that's a good problem to have. I think McLeod on any other team really is a top six forward, at least most other teams. But certainly, like if you have him in your bottom six, like you're doing something all right with, you know, your depth.
They're pretty solid.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jim, let's start talking about defense. This kind of was their Achilles heel along with goaltending last season. So they brought in Ryan Murray to kind of alleviate that a little bit. What are your expectations for Murray and what he's going to bring to the Oilers?
I don't really know, to be honest with you. Like, I think he's going to probably be a regular. If they go, you know, because Woodcroft has a tendency to play extra defenseman.
So he
could get more slots. 11-7 on, he could get that seventh spot on a regular basis. I think they needed to make sure that they had some insurance in the bottom pair, because you've got Kulak now taking a much bigger role in the second pair than he had done before. And you needed somebody, if it's a Roberger, it's a rookie of some kind, you needed somebody to pair off there. Or if it's Tyson Barry who's playing where, and you need a guy like Ryan Murray to sort of be his defensive defenseman, that's why you probably have him, just for flexibility reasons. Does he play all the time? I don't know. I don't think so. But I believe that they think Ryan Murray has more to give. He's been injury prone a little bit. He's been a little quiet on some of the teams, but I think they believe they've found a player, whether it's analytics or whatever the case might be, just leadership and stuff like that, that they think he's going to be a useful piece for them. So I would expect to see him a lot.
Yeah. He had a lot of potential coming out of his draft year as one of the higher ranked guys. So, and he's, again, another guy that seems to have been around for a long time, but he's not overly old. Like, he's not really old yet, but
no. We'll he's just had some bum luck.
You know what I mean? Had a lot of injuries. And like, just seems like he'll have something wrong and then he'll come back and then it'll be something else. Like, it's not, he doesn't re-injure things. It's just unlucky or something, you know, like it's just,
Yeah.
Something. Well, let's talk about a guy that broke out last season, Evan Bouchard, who, 43 points, really good on the power play. Do you see him hitting that number again or even higher?
Higher.
Because he looks like he's going to be the number one power play unit guy with those two.
Yep. Yeah, I was really, I was dying on that hill last year where I was like, Bouchard's going to get 45 points. And I was really close. and that's only because he didn't play for a good chunk of the first part of the season in the top pair. He wasn't your first unit power play guy because Tyson Barrie still was. And the Oilers gave Tyson Barrie a lot of looks when I believe that Evan Bouchard had already sort of proven that maybe he should get more opportunities there. I think this season he'll get that. I do believe that the Oilers think he is the future. I don't know if Tyson Barrie sticks around. We'll see if he plays here all season, but either way, I think Evan Bouchard is going to be the guy who's running that first unit power play. And that dude has a bomb.
Yeah.
Like that guy likes to shoot. He has no issues whatsoever holding back. He absolutely is going to so many points. In fact, that I'm guaranteeing he's going to hit his bonus. And I'm really confident that the Oilers are going to look back and go, man, we should have locked that dude up. Because he's going to be quite expensive, and when that happens, because those guys that get a lot of points, they are pricey. So I think he's going to have a really good year. The question mark with him is just, can he both have the offensive output and production and stay consistently solid defensively? Because he did have some warts last year. We talked about it a number of times on the Oilers podcast, that there were times where he just looked like it was slipping away from him, and then he would get it back and he'd be really solid for like four or five games in a row. So he's got to get that consistency level. And I think that he will. It was really helpful to be able to play with Duncan Keith in the second half of the season. He does not have Duncan Keith now. So we'll see where he pairs up there, but I think he's going to be, he'll get the points. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, too. It's going to depend on who his partner is, because if he has someone like Keith who, you know, is reliable and he knows is always going to be back there covering for him, then he can be a little more offensive minded at times. So it'll be, you know, that'll be a big, big question mark to see if that will find someone that can mesh with him as well on that end.
Yeah, I'm assuming it'll be Brett Kulak to start, but that'll depend on Cody Ceci. He's injured right now, so I don't know how much time he's going to miss. Darnell Nurse and Cody Ceci were a really solid pair, but if that sticks, then you need your second pair. I don't know if Kulak's going to be able to take on the second line role on a regular basis, but we'll see. I'm assuming that's the pair to start things.
Yeah. All right. Well, great segue, Jim, because that's the next question. Talking about Brett Kulak and coming over from the Canadiens last season, played really well, fit in, like you said. Now it's going to be there full-time, likely on that second pairing. So let's hear it. What are your expectations for Kulak this season?
I hope that he doesn't feel overwhelmed with the amount of minutes that he's probably going to have to play.
Yeah.
In short sample sizes in Montreal, he looked like he could be that guy. And so I think that's why the Oilers are like, this is a good deal for us. It's the cheap contract, value-wise, comparatively. It's a good signing for them. I know there was a little iffy that he was going to check the market out, and then he ended up coming back and signing with the Oilers, which is great news because they really needed him to. I just am not sure that he's going to be your solid second pair guy all year. I hope he doesn't feel overwhelmed with the amount of minutes and the pressure that comes with that, because I don't know that he's ever played that many games in that position. So that could be the question mark. I think he's solid. I liked the addition when they made it last year at the deadline. He proved that that was a good play by Ken Holland. I give it up the second to get him, and signing him was a smart move.
Yep.
We'll see where he slots in, but he'll be a regular for sure. Just whether or not he goes second pair, third pair, and how often they make that switch. But I think he's going to be all right in the solid second pair there.
Yeah, he's absolutely a very, I thought it was a very underrated acquisition at the deadline last season. And it turned out to be really good for the Oilers for sure. Well, you mentioned him earlier too, and Duncan Keith retired. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure he stepped into the front office now, right?
Yeah, he's got an executive role. I'm not exactly sure what the title of it is. I'm assuming it's some sort of scouting around that Penticton area.
Special assistant or something.
Yeah, like I don't think he's quite up there with Jason Spezza working side by side with Kyle Dubas, but I do believe that the Oilers were happy enough to have him in the system. They wanted to keep him close to Penticton, which is the only reason he really came to Edmonton in the first place.
Yeah,
I think that that's probably what they're working on here. I like it because Duncan Keith, I mean, that guy's got miles of experience, and there's so much, and the leadership, you cannot deny, whether you want to say that he didn't play as well as the Duncan Keith of old. I thought he was solid, but the leadership was a whole other deal, right? Yeah. What he provided for them, the experience that he offered them, the playoff experience that he just made people comfortable. And he was a godsend for Evan Bouchard. So
yeah,
I think that his being in the organization and him bringing that experience with him is a solid move.
Yeah. Well, he won't be on the ice. How much will they miss him on the ice? I mean, the thing is, he did play a lot. He played upwards of 20 minutes a night and, you know, had to step in on the top pairing when there were injuries too. So how much will this blue line miss him?
I think more than people want to admit. You know, I don't know that. I think the trade, it depends on your perspective. If you're looking at this from a cap point of view, then probably not. If you're looking at it from a guy who can play solid minutes in a second pair role, you don't really have to worry about him too much. He's not the fastest guy in the world, and he will get burned every once in a while because of his age, but he's still really solid. And he probably could have been this year if he continued to play, but I just think it worked out for both people, to him, for him to do his own thing, for the others to get rid of that money. So depending on how you look at it, you might miss him, you might not, but it would be nice if the Oilers, if there was a rule somehow in the NHL that you could retire and then re-sign for half of your contract, I think you always would have done it. Right. But it doesn't work that way. So it's not feasable, but that would have been, he would have been a solid $2.5 million guy.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. If it was the end of the contract and bring him back for, you know, a hometown discount type thing, they certainly would have talked to him about doing that. And it's unfortunate. I love Duncan Keith. You know, I was at Michigan State pretty much the same time he was playing there. And so I've been watching his career for a long, long time.
Yeah. And it's hard to blame him too. Like, the guy's had a really long career. He's got family things that he wants to do. And the way that his contract was structured, he was only going to get paid $1 million.
Yeah.
So the guy has made so much money in his career. What's the million?
Right.
So if you're ready to walk away, there's no financial reason. It's not like he was getting five. He got all that money from Chicago early. So he was only getting the one. It made sense that he was going to leave.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about another not as storied veteran, but veteran. So what are the chances Jason Demers is going to end up earning a contract out of camp?
I think it's probably better than Jake Virtanen, but I still don't know that Jason Demers is going to be on this team. Now, there's a couple things to consider here. One, the Oilers are looking for veterans and leadership. Ken Holland loves that. He absolutely likes to bring in those guys that have that experience. They're hockey guys, he calls them, right?
Yeah.
Yes. We also have to remember that Jason Demers came to Edmonton and checked it out when Milan Lucic came to Edmonton and checked it out. It just so happened that Jason Demers did not sign. So there were talks at that point that he was interested in the Oilers and the Oilers were interested in him. Now, different management, things like that, but maybe they're revisiting this. If the Oilers need the depth on defense, if they have, you know, a guy who's willing to sign a two-way deal. I don't know. There could be a lot of pieces that need to move around here for this to work. I still think it's a long shot. I think anybody invited here on a PTO is probably a long shot, but Jason Demers might be of the three. Justin Bailey's the other one. He's probably got the most likely chance of making this team because the Oilers are the weakest on defense. Yeah. I just don't know what else he's got in the tank. So it'll be, but they may not care so much as long as he's providing other things, right? If he's giving you the leadership, the ability to fill in on a, you know, partial night to night basis, and he's okay with it.
Mm.
It makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. And like you said, Woodcroft likes to run that 11-7. So he could be one of those guys that rotates in as that 7th D, kind of be like that experience and just kind of extra coach on the bench, like voice.
Yeah. And you have to remember, some of this isn't player related. Some of this is financial related.
Yeah. Right? Also true.
It's just only so much the Oilers can do when they have no room as it is. So that's they true. Might want to sign a guy like Demers, but they might not have a choice. They might not be able to.
Like, can we pay you in under next year's contract?
Do you mind working for Canadian Tire money?
Lots of gift cards.
That's right.
All right. Well, you mentioned about the forwards being a top three in the NHL. So obviously the top in the Pacific. What do you think about the defense? Where do they kind of match up in this division?
Well, I think it's not weak. It's not as strong for sure. It really depends on how you look at Darnell Nurse. If you think he's a top guy, which a lot of people in Edmonton do, but he had injury issues last year. He doesn't play your power play, so he doesn't get the gravy points a lot of the top guys get. So he has to do other things to really stand out. He's got to be really solid defensively. He's got to be really aggressive. He's got to, you know, be a physical force, when even though you don't necessarily want him to fight because he's good. I just don't think he's going to get you 50, 60 points, and he's probably never going to get you that if he doesn't play the power play. So he's always going to be judged under a different lens. But they're pretty good. I think they're well-rounded. I think they, as a unit, will work well together, but they just don't have that top level one and two. It's just, it's not really, it all depends on what Evan Bouchard turns into. And it's still really early in his career. Right. I think Darnell English is going to be solid. I think he's going to be, he'll be more like the previous year than he was last year, because I think he'll be, and he was really good, and people have already overlooked that. They're just worried about the money, the nine and a half or whatever he's getting paid. But I think they're good. I just think that they have a couple holes there where they might not at forward. So I don't know where I'd slot them, you know, between the Pacific Division, if they're second, third, or whatever, right in the middle of the pack for me.
I could see that. All right, let's move over to goaltending. This definitely was one of the low points of the team last year. Mike Smith played his heart out, but at 41 years old, I believe he was, he just couldn't quite get it done. So now the Oilers have picked up Jack Campbell from the Toronto Maple Leafs. What are your expectations for Campbell, and is he going to be the goalie that finally puts the Oilers over the top?
Yeah, I have high expectations, high hopes for Jack Campbell. I think he's solid. I think he knows how to play in a market where the spotlight is on him like crazy. He seems totally cool with it. Like, he's absolutely, he's like a Hyman before him. His personality is just off the charts, right? Like, people just absolutely love this dude. So I think the Oilers will play for him. I think they'll really work hard in front of him because they just like him so much. Everybody seems to like him that much. I think he's a solid goaltender. There were some missteps in Toronto, but it's hard to be perfect in Toronto when everybody's watching you like that. But to be fair, I will say this, Kyle, I think the Oilers goaltending in the last couple of seasons was better than a lot of people think.
Yeah.
But it's also a little bit of luck, right? Like, Mike Smith was a trooper. That dude was competitive, maybe more than anybody else.
Yeah.
But you're right. He was injured. He's older. He doesn't, he cannot give you that consistency that you're looking for. And it was time to bring in an upgrade. I think Campbell is an upgrade.
Yeah.
Koskinen leaving and going playing internationally. And then, you know, Smith being on LTIR. I like, here's what I really like. And I don't know if we're going to talk about him, but Stuart Skinner as a backup, I like that dude too. I think that this is a guy who is going to get 25, maybe 30 games, which is helpful for Jack Campbell. So he doesn't play, play more than 55. Cause I think that's where it fell apart for him in Toronto when they overplayed him.
It's
a struggle, right?
Yeah.
So if he can play 50 to 55 games and Skinner can get in 30, that's a great combination. I like it a lot. I think Campbell will be good though.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I loved the signing for the Oilers when it happened. I thought they certainly made huge improvements to their goaltending and defensive core when, just by getting Campbell. And I think you're right. I think it's going to be like a Hyman situation where you're going to see him really just shine and really kind of take to this new market in Edmonton, leaving Ontario, moving to over to Edmonton. And, you know, I think Campbell's going to be awesome. And like you said, you brought up Skinner. He's going to be pretty good. And I think that's going to make a pretty good tandem there. If he could get 25, 30 starts, I think that's going to be a big help for Campbell, because he did hit that wall last year.
Yeah.
Skinner is unproven. Like, we don't know what he's going to be, but here's a guy who a lot of people were like, dude, put him in the net last year. Just give him some opportunities. Cause when he's in there, he's been really good. And he was arguably the best goaltender in the AHL last year. You've got a guy who is ready to show that he can be an NHL backup. And then you're hoping that he shows enough to be like, oh man, this guy could be a starter eventually. I think that he's got that in him.
Yeah. Well, if you ask Brian Swain, who also writes for the Hockey Writers here, he would say the same. If you watch Oilers overtime, he was a big proponent of him getting the net. So he's probably ecstatic that he's going
to
be back.
If there's a Stuart Skinner fan club, he's in it. And if there isn't, he's going to start one.
I love it.
For sure. Well, you basically answered our next segment question. So in that whole package, but I think Skinner's going to be a heck of a backup this season, and with Campbell, and probably going to get some soup chants in the crowd, just like he had done in Toronto. So, when Campbell signed, I'm like, I was half, I'm like, oh, come on. Of course, they finally get a goaltender now. That doesn't help.
Doesn't help the Canucks. Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't help the Canucks. But the Canucks have Thatcher Demko, so I'm okay. Yeah. Well, on that note, let's talk about how this goaltending now matches up in the Pacific Division. Actually, the Pacific has some pretty good goaltenders in it now. What do you think they kind of match in this division now?
I would say that he's put the Oilers probably in the 3-4 spot. I think that Thatcher Demko is probably the best goaltender in the Pacific Division. I believe that. I think Vegas' goaltending situation is a total disaster.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a huge mess. I think Seattle on paper has some decent goaltending, but it hasn't shown through. San Jose is what San Jose is. LA's, their guys are getting a little bit older. Calgary's got Jacob Markstrom, who is really solid, but the Oilers exposed him badly last year. So I think he's in that, you know, top two spot. And then John Gibson in Anaheim is pretty good. So I think the Oilers are probably in that 3-4 range. If Campbell plays the way that he played when he was hot in Toronto, I think they might be 2-3, but I would put him around the 3-4 in that division.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like Matt said, there's a lot of good goaltending out there, and you know, Quick is still proven he can be just as good in LA in spurts, and then they have that young Cal Peterson coming up who's going to be pretty good too. So a lot of good goaltending in the wings in the Pacific as well. So all right, Jim, well, that's going to move over to our quick fire segment here, where we're going to throw some questions at you, and we ask that you give us your first answer that comes to mind, and then you can give a sentence or two to explain if you want, but we want to try and keep it nice and quick. So we'll start out here with the first one. What is the biggest storyline or question mark going into the 2022-23 season for the Edmonton Oilers?
I'll say there are two: Puljujärvi trade and Ryan McLeod contract.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those two, well, one of them should be
resolved. I think the McLeod thing gets solved here in the next 48 hours.
I hope so. I mean, it's been a surprise on my end. You know, I could talk the whole show about how I, like, just what I liked about him last playoffs and what he could bring to this team in the future.
So much speed.
He's good. And I think the Oilers are not worried about not getting it done. I think they're just waiting. I think they're looking at flexibility and trying to figure out the best option. And there's no rush. I think they'll figure it out. Even if he has to take a discount now, they'll make it up next year.
Yeah,
for sure.
I agree.
All right. One or two breakout stars for the season?
Well, if you're talking about people who haven't had the production and are about to, I think Ryan McLeod is one of them. I think Evan Bouchard is the other. I think that those two players are going to be solid contributors for the Oilers. And don't be shocked if Evan Bouchard gets 50 to 55 points a season.
I think Bouchard's definitely primed for a big year. All right. Who is one player that needs a bounce back from last season?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say Warren Fogle. I don't think he played badly. I think, in fact, he was actually kind of right on par with what you expected him to be out of Carolina. But I also think that there were fans and people in the city that were like, we thought he would bring more, right? Yeah. Like, we just sort of thought he would do more stuff. I think he's solid, but I just think he didn't necessarily get all the opportunities, and he gave you exactly what he was always giving you. So he stayed on a straight line. I think they wanted just a little spike and it didn't get it. So I'd say Warren Fogle.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good one. All right. One player that could be an X factor this season. Could be a player, or it could be just something with the team.
Jack Campbell. He's the guy. If he plays well, this is a really good season for the Oilers. If he doesn't, and you have to put this all on Stuart Skinner, it's going to be interesting.
Very long season. Yeah. or the Oilers are going to have to try and win every game 10-9.
And maybe they can, but I don't think that's what you want to do. Yeah.
It would be fun for us casual Oilers fans, not so much the people covering them, right?
Yeah, we had some whoppers in the playoffs.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Who is one rookie or prospect that could surprise and make the roster out of training camp?
Dylan Holloway. I think there is a very big future for him. I think there's a lot of expectation, but not so much that he's necessarily going to feel the pressure of that expectation. I just believe that the Oilers think that he's going to be something. And I think a lot of people think, I mean, I remember back to Craig Button saying that guy was NHL ready 2 seasons ago. If that's the case, and he is as good as a lot of people think he could be, if he plays, I think he's going to produce.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
For sure. All right, give us a player that fans should be watching we have not mentioned on the show yet.
If we're talking about the current roster, I think watch for Kyler Yamamoto to get 25 and possibly 30 if he plays top six on a regular basis. And the reason that I say that is because I think he figured it out at the end of the season. The last 20, 30 games of that season, he wasn't very great. He wasn't really good at the first half. He did other things. He hit, he played forecheck, he played inside players, and he was aggressive, but he wasn't scoring. He wasn't shooting. When he figured out that he needed to shoot, and he started to shoot, he started to score in bunches. And so if he continues to do that out of the season, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he gets 25 in his sleep.
Yeah. I'd love to see Yamamoto get up there. So, all right. This will probably be super easy, Jim. Who's going to lead the team in scoring for forwards?
Should I be strange and say Leon Draisaitl? No, it could be. Here's what I'll do. I'm gonna go on a limb. I think it's Connor McDavid. I think he gets 135 points.
Okay, there we go. I like
so
that.
I put myself out there, and there's a really good chance I'm gonna be wrong. But I think he gets 135 points. And I think for production wise, offense, I think it's gonna be a flip flop between Tyson Berry and Evan Bouchard. It just really depends on how many minutes they choose to give those two guys. If they start the season with Berry at quarterback on the power play, he's going to score. If they started with Bouchard and they keep him there, he's going to score a bunch. So that's who I think production wise is going to be. I think Darnell Nurse is going to have a rebound season to be your best all around defenseman, but for scoring, I think it'll probably be Evan Bouchard.
Bouchard or Barry, depending on who gets the more PT or right. power play.
I'd say Bouchard probably well.
I think Bouchard. Well, especially if Jim's predicting 50 to 60 points for Bouchard.
Well, keep in mind, Tyson Berry did it. He led the league in defenseman and wasn't voted for the Norris. He didn't get a single ballot vote for that, but he was the highest scoring regular season defenseman just a season ago, right? So, he still got it.
That's true.
Bring up
that's
a true. Very good point.
All right. Well, on that note, these could be in this discussion. Pick one player that could be traded before the trade deadline.
Can I cheat?
Yeah.
A tiny little bit. I think it's the first round draft pick of the Oilers this year.
Okay.
Because they have, I say that because they have not traded their first round draft pick in like forever, right? Mm. They are the one team, maybe a couple teams. He has not traded a first like in forever. He's kept all of his first round picks. In fact, at this Penticton tournament, four first rounders were at this thing. I think that's like a record for the Oilers. I believe this is the year that if they're in this and they're pushing, and they want to go past the Western Conference Finals, I think he goes all in, and I think he trades that first round pick. So that's something that he has not done in the past, and he's going in sometimes, but never all in like that.
Yeah.
And I think he will this season.
I like that. I like that.
Good one.
Good adjustment there, Jim. On the fly. I love it. All right. This is a fun one. And you've already given us a couple on this show, so I'm excited for this one even more now. What's one bold prediction or hot take for the 2022-23 season? For the Edmonton Oilers,
I think we're going to probably, if we're counting playoffs, I think we're going to see another Calgary Flames and Oilers matchup. And my bold prediction is it's even more entertaining than the last time.
Oh, it's only more entertaining than that.
Yeah. That's like, because we had the Matthew Tkachuk stuff all over the place. Like, Johnny Gaudreau was really good, and it's a very different team.
Yeah. But
I think that Calgary feels like they got something to prove, even though those two guys aren't on this team anymore. And I think they've got a better defense with Mackenzie Weegar there.
Absolutely.
And I think Calgary wants to play Edmonton again. And I think Edmonton wants to beat them again. And
for sure.
I think that'll be a very entertaining series. I believe it'll happen.
Yeah. That'd be so much fun, especially if it could be a Western Conference final. Like, that would be so much fun. I doubt it will be, but even the second round would be good. But man, could you imagine?
Yeah.
That was probably the funnest series to, like, we did our post game shows after that one. Jeez, that was all right. We've talked about it a bit here, but where do you see the Oilers finishing in the standings? Will they make the playoffs? And if so, how far do you see them going?
In the Pacific, I'm actually going to call it and say I think they'll be first. They might be second, but I think they'll win the Pacific Division.
Yep.
In the standings, I think they're top five. I would normally call them a top eight team, but I think they're better. I think they were improved, so I'll put them in the top five. And that might be a bold statement, but I'm going to stick them there anyway. And then what was the last question? Where, how far did it get?
Yeah.
Well, look at it this way. If they don't go at least one round in the playoffs, it's a massive disappointment. So yeah. I think they're going to get to the Western Conference Finals again. If they can find that other gear, if everybody's clicking, wouldn't shock me if they're in the final. Do they win it? I don't know. There's pretty good teams in the Eastern Conference. So maybe not, but I think they're going to shoot for it. It wouldn't shock me if they're a top four playoff team again.
Absolutely. And like you said, if Campbell can be the X factor and really show up and be his hot self in that playoffs. And then if Holland does give up that first round to make that extra push, that one final piece to that puzzle, I mean, Edmonton could be the year they finally figure it all out.
Yeah.
There, it's going to be a very interesting trade deadline. I think there's going to be some very, very big names moved.
Yeah. I mean, we already saw it kind of this offseason that it's kind of like anything's out the window now. So if there's a team that can make a push and they can put something out that's good enough, especially with how heavy and deep this upcoming draft is this year, there could be some teams that could put some really enticing offers out there for some guys you might not expect to be traded.
Yeah. The cap is going to make the biggest difference. Who's got the also room true. And who's going to use that third team to get the 50-50 salary retention down there. If they can get creative and the others can figure it out, they'll probably make a push for somebody.
Yeah.
So
I'm kind of, there's one other thing I'm kind of watching is how easy teams are going to be to trade that 2023 first round picks, because they're a lot more valuable this year.
Well, it's a deep draft. And if you think you're a lottery team, you're not giving away Connor Bedard. You're just not.
No,
right.
No.
You want your opportunity to have that shot. So yeah, I think that the draft picks are going to have major value. So I saying that, because I think the Oilers are going to be a good team. They're going to be later in the first round. I think that they look at it and go, well, these first rounders are worth a lot. We need a lot. They're going to get probably something more for it than in any given normal year.
Yep.
But they're also so high up there that they're probably not in that top like 15, 20 that you want to be if you have a deep draft. So I think they're in a unique position where they're going to be too good to really take advantage of the first round pick that they get, unless they find a gold nugget at the end of the rainbow. But I also don't think that their draft pick is going to be high enough that anybody's going to be like, yeah, we can't not move this. You know what I mean? So
true. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, thanks Jim for coming on the show. And we have a tradition on the Hockey Writers Podcast. We do an Articles of the Day segment right at the end. We're not going to give our picks, but we're going to let you pick one from the Oilers writing team or your own to feature on the podcast here.
Well, I'll be honest. I tend to cover more of the Oilers stuff because I am an Oilers fan. I'll probably go, Colton Pankey wrote an article, The Four Major Questions Going Into the Season for the Oilers. And it's pretty good. I mean, we talked a lot about some of that tonight on the show. He talks about Ryan McLeod. He talks about if the PTOs are going to work. So it's a pretty good, well-rounded kind of coverage of some of the major issues going into that. So I would recommend people check that one out.
Sounds good. Colton's been on fire writing a bunch of for the Oilers and the Flames. So check out
He was on our Flames show, the preview show. So
yeah. And every once in a while he pops up and then for Vegas too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
He's all over the place.
He's got the whole West Coast covered.
Yeah. No,
he does the news and rumors for a few teams. I think he do Boston
right. I don't remember now. Yeah.
Well, but he'll be a guy in the know then. You gotta talk to him a lot this season.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
Get him on the podcast. More often. Same thing with you, Jim. We got to get you on more often too.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm looking forward to getting back to talking about the Oilers again. I know we took a break during the off season, and we haven't really done that show while people are just sort of relaxing and getting ready. But I'm psyched to get that show going again.
Yeah. Oilers overtime coming back. So look out for that. All right. Well, again, thanks, Jim, for coming on the show, talking Oilers, previewing this upcoming season, which is going to be very exciting for the Oilers, for hockey fans in general. We always like hockey back. Ben, it's all just around the corner. We're recording this. It's just on the heels of, well, not heels, but almost the preseason.
First day of fall today.
We're almost there. So if you're watching, you could be watching this when the preseason's already going on. But it's just around the corner. So thanks for watching for another preview show at the Hockey Writers Podcast. make sure to check out all the Edmonton Oilers writers, that they put out some great stuff throughout the season. And of course, the preview stuff has been going on last few weeks as well. So check all that out. Check out the Morning Skate newsletter, morningskate.io. That goes Monday, Wednesday, Friday right now. It's going to go back to its Monday to Friday normal schedule once the regular season gets started. Make sure checking out all of our other preview shows that already come out, if you're so inclined, if you want to watch them all and have fun. And make sure to hit the follow the YouTube channel, make sure subscribed, and hit the like button there. And we'll see you next time on another season preview show at the Hockey Writers Podcast.